everyone. Happy Monday once again. This is your host, Pam Stack, and you're listening to Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. Tonight, I am speaking to Deborah J. Ledford, who has a group of four books that are fascinating. And she's won an Agatha Award and been nominated for a whole bunch more. Take a second, and we're going to go ahead and talk to her. I'll be right back. For being with me. I'm thrilled that you stuck around after the earlier interview today. Tonight I'm with Deborah J. Ledford. Deborah and I met a long time ago, and I don't know what happened, but she was busy and I was busy, and we never got a chance to talk until just now. She's got four books in this really interesting series. The book titles are Crescendo, Snare, Causing Chaos, and Staccato, not in that order. But she's also won an Agatha for being part of an anthology. She also was Agatha nominated for her audiobooks, two of them. She's been shortlisted for the Hillerman Sky Award. She was a finalist. New Mexico, Arizona Book Awards. She's a three-time nominee for the Pushcart Prize. And her award-winning stories appear in numerous print publications as well as literary and mystery anthologies. She is just terrific. She's a part Native American. We're going to learn all about that. I love it. She's gorgeous. She's fabulous. I'm so happy to welcome Deborah Ledford to the studio. Deborah, thank you so much for being with me.
Well, thank you, Pam. That was quite the introduction. Thank you very much.
Well, I'll say it for you every time if you want. You know, just let me know. I love the fact that your books are narrated by Christina Fox, who is a television and film actress. She's been on quite a few very well-known programs, including Dexter and NCIS and 24, correct?
Yes, yes. And she's got an amazing voice, amazing voice.
She does. How did you manage to snag her, other than the fact that she probably fell in love with your books?
Well, more through a producer who has worked with Christina before, and I became friends with this TV producer, and she felt confident enough, and you know, that I was a real person and a good person, and hooked us up. And Christina read Snare and Crescendo at that time. I hadn't finished Causing Chaos yet. And she enjoyed it enough to say yes, to become the voice of my series, really.
I love that. And congratulations on all the success for your audiobooks. Audiobooks are an anomaly to me. I'll tell you why. I have usually talk radio on in my car, generally NPR when I'm driving around. And sometimes if I have a lot on my mind, I don't even hear the show, even if it's a show I like. Like, I'm an addict to car talk. So they do all the replays on Saturdays. And if I'm driving around and have too much on my mind, I won't listen. And I'm fearful that, I mean, I don't know if you've ever been on a long drive and you've put, you know, an MP3 in or a CD or whatever, you know, have in your car, and you're really looking forward to listening to the music, but your mind wanders. I'm afraid if I listen to an audiobook, my brain is going to take a vacation and I'm not going to hear anything. So
yeah, maybe it's more of a practice kind of a situation.
It might well be. And then when I'm home, I'm so busy on my laptop or reading that any other sound becomes ambient noise to me. So how does one actively listen to a novel like yours, these thrillers, and how is the experience different than reading it?
Well, I think the main thing is that the performance really, really takes the work to another level. I mean, if it's a very, you know, we all want it to be a very good performance and a good experience. And that narrator, you know, when they are so talented, not only are reading the words, but they're also performing nuances as far as inflections and, you know, going from character to character, making that delineation that very clear that there's a there's a change in character, and you know, working with the crescendos of working its way to a climax, that type of thing. A lot also helps with how it's edited. I produced both of the audiobooks, actually three audiobooks. One is from a different author, but and I was very, very hands-on as far as the editing goes and the pacing. So, you know, there are a lot of different mechanics that go into the actual final product, but it all depends, you know, so much of it is really, really crucial for to get a really good narrator. Because
I would
imagine.
Because
that's what's compelling. Yeah, that's what's compelling.
I would imagine. Now,
I have a couple of... I have a couple of authors that I love to read, you know, print-wise, but I don't really care for their narrators, so I don't listen to their audiobooks.
Interesting. Do you divide your reading time between reading and listening?
I listen when I do travel. I go to California quite a bit, or Tucson, which is, you know, a couple of hours away. So whenever I'm doing a road trip, or I live in the Phoenix metropolitan area, so sometimes it's, you know, half an hour to get anywhere. So,
sure.
So I'm listening in chunks at a time primarily.
So, do you still get the full benefit of the book even if you're listening in chunks at a time, as you put it?
I think so. I mean, every now and then I'll have to hit the go back 30
sure.
seconds or so, but yeah, maybe it's because I have listened to them so often that now I, you know, it's kind of a brain, a little bit of a pivot. Now I'm going to pay attention to what's being said to me, that type of thing, you know.
Interesting.
And it's like at the end of the day, before I go to bed, I always read a print book, at least for an hour or 2 hours, because that's the only time I know that I'm going to get some pleasure reading in. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, different.
I want to talk about all the creative aspects of your life, because you truly are one of the most creative people I've ever met. You are the president and producer for the independent media company called IOF Productions Limited. So not only did you produce Causing Chaos and Crescendo audiobooks, as well as The Blind Eye, which was also narrated by Christina Fox. You worked as a writer for a decade. You were a professional scenic artist on motion pictures and industrial films and commercials and theater. You actually won accolades for your scenic artistry for the Coen Brothers' Raising Arizona. Is that correct?
Well, I don't know about accolades, but I was the scenic artist. Oh, I love it too. Still, I wasn't a union member, so I didn't get mentioned in the title cards. But you know, that's what happens when you're, you know, doing that type of a thing for a living. But
I loved it. I think I saw that film 10 times. So kudos to you. And I bet you it was part of the scenes that I love so much. Now, you also have a very interesting personal history. You're part Eastern Band Cherokee, and you're just so beautiful. You're the absolute embodiment of what I think a Cherokee woman looks like. You're very Cher looking. I hope you take that as the compliment that it's meant to be.
Oh, sure.
But you have this gorgeous long black hair, and you're so lean and gorgeous. But you grew up in, or summered anyway, in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, but you live in Arizona, so it's quite a contrast. But where did your storytelling skills come from?
Oh, certainly from my mother's side of the family, and that's in North Carolina. I truly believe that that Southerners are the very best storytellers, and they know exactly how to do it. You know, they come full circle with even if it's only a 5-minute, you know, little story. I think that most certainly was from my grandfather and my cousin and my uncle and. Spending summers, really all of my summers growing up, those, 2 to 3 months in the heart of the Great Smoky Mountains, there's not a whole lot to do except to talk.
Is your heritage as part Cherokee, did you get storytelling skills from that side of your family, do you think, as
yes.
well?
Yeah, that is it. My mother's people. Uh-huh. I don't know if that's the Cherokee side, but it certainly is the North Carolina side. My grandfather, my mother's father's mother was full blood Cherokee, so we don't know a whole lot about her. But I knew that even starting out with the writing. That I wanted to implement Native American of some sort, and I figured, well, the place I know best, the western, that western North Carolina, and the Bryson City type of area, so that's where I set my series, my thriller series.
So let's talk about your thriller series, because your books are fascinating. They really are. They're unlike anything I've ever read. Your character, Enola Walela, right? Walela,
yes.
Am I saying it the right way? And Stephen
yep.
Hawk are indigenous people, and I love that. Will you tell audience a little bit about your characters before we talk about the individual books?
Sure. So Enola Walela actually is part Cherokee. Stephen Hawk, however, is African-American. And in the first two books, he takes lead in Staccato and Snare. And then I knew that since this was going to be an ongoing series, that I need to implement a love element, give him a little bit of a love life and cause some chaos for him. So I then came up with the character of Enola Walela. And she was raised by her grandmother, on the Cherokee reservation after Enola's mother died when Enola was 10 years old. So she's standoffish. She's, her heart is closed. She's a professional. She's the only Cherokee female police officer in this little, for this little tiny community. And Stephen Hawk was the deputy in the first two books, and then he became sheriff in Crescendo, and then also for causing chaos. So, two different departments butting heads with each other, differences in how to do procedure, and Enola's always off doing essentially what she wants to do. She gets into some trouble because she doesn't listen real well.
Well, most strong-headed females are like that, those alpha females, they think, most people think of alphas as only being males, but that's not true.
No.
Most of us women know that anyway. You are a very creative person. When did you know you wanted to be a writer?
Well, I started off as an artist, and so pen and ink and scratch board and... then I graduated to oil on canvas, and that's how I then got into the scenic artistry, was because of that background.
Uh-huh.
So then really during high school, I did some short stories and was involved in some poetry, and my English teacher, they did a publication every year.
Mm-hmm.
Or actually every semester, where they would publish, you know, people's short stories and poems and artwork, and I never got any short stories or poems accepted, but I did illustrate, you know, my fellow classmates, you know, their stories. So,
how interesting.
So then after the scenic artistry, I did that for 10 years, and then it became too physically taxing on me. I mean, you know, you're hauling 5-gallon paint buckets and
right.
living off ladders and it got to be
too much
physical for me. Yeah,
sure.
Too much. My knees were shot, and so that's when I got into screenwriting at that point, and then formed my production company and so that's how it started. And then, you know, Hollywood wasn't, you know, it was a lot of, I was actually in the international finance end of the motion picture packaging of some films, and several of mine were involved in the package. So yeah, it was just too hard on my heart and my soul, and finally got out of that and decided, well, the next step then would be, I guess I'll write a novel. And eventually Staccato became the first novel that I wrote that was based on a screenplay. So a lot of
How
different variations from the screenplay, but
sure.
that's where it started. Yeah.
Wow. It's just fascinating to me. You've done so many things, and do you think you found your niche, or do you think that, you know, maybe you're going to write for a while, but probably there's something else ahead of you also?
Yeah, I mean, I Enola needs to rest. So the series
right.
is I'm still waiting for the, you know, the best subplot to come to me. I'm working on a different novel, standalone novel now, but I'm really you know, I want to produce films. I want to actually get films produced, and
uh-huh.
that's what I'm working on now. Is we have a film that's in development right now. That
wonderful.
Yeah. So we're my production company, IOF Productions Limited, is has it to. It's being considered for a film fund package finance type of situation.
Oh,
so a number of films that would be. Funded based on that. So fingers crossed that it will be accepted. It's you know, it's been a lot of work, and
of course.
And, so, you know,
and
we'll see.
There's
we'll see
no
how it goes.
The overnight success that took 20 years, right?
Yes.
Now, you're also an Arizona State University adjunct professor for creative writing in the Piper Center, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I've got a class coming up next month.
It's like you don't have enough to do, so you keep adding.
I know. Well, you know, we book things, you know, 6 to 9 months in advance, and then you realize, oh my God, now I've got this coming up. You know,
right.
you don't, you book it so far in advance that then you don't even look at your schedule until, you know, a couple of months beforehand. So,
right,
but,
right.
But no, I love to teach. I love to mentor, and I you know, whatever I can give back, I am more than happy to do so. I've had many, many heartbreaks, you know, through all of my careers in the
sure.
arts. And if I can save anybody just a little bit of heartache, then I'm there.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the humanities, the arts and humanities, unfortunately, are not as revered as other things are, like sports. And that's really, and not that I have anything against athletes, I don't. But, boy, talk about soothing your soul. That's what the arts do versus sports, which, you know, make a lot of people aggressive and crazy, except maybe the ones that are playing it, and they're probably, you know, worn out from it. But tell me a little, let's talk a little bit about the overall theme, because these books are connected. Although you can read them standalone, there is a connection to all these books. Give me the elevator pitch.
Well, they are essentially tied together, but only because of the, you know, the law enforcement and
mm-hmm.
you know, characters and their family. But definitely,
right.
each story is its own standalone story. And I you know, there's always, we authors have always have the balancing act of how much do you tell that happened in the previous book or previous other
right.
books, you know, so very little is sprinkled in, with the hope that they want to start, you know, if they've started with book four, that they'll want to go back and see the inception, how the story grows. But it
right.
primarily is, you know, so much of it is based on the family, you know, and how difficult it is to deal with family, how we all need family, you know, whether it be, you know, the family we choose or the family that are given us. But
right.
So much of it, you know, and it takes place in North Carolina, and community is very, very strong. And
yes.
With Enola as a police officer and Hawk as the sheriff, you know, responsibilities are sometimes overwhelming. To do right and do well, because they're always in the spotlight.
Sure.
Because they are both of them are the anomaly.
So when you decided to write your first book, did you have a premise, a what if, or did you have a character and then said what if?
Well, I tell you what happened is, if you look at my cover, you remember the poster shops way back in the 90s?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I was killing some time waiting for a movie time. And I was in a poster shop, and I was flipping through, you know, those great big posters.
Yes.
And that image hit. I mean, I absolutely, everything stood still. I stood there and just stared at it. And immediately the subplot came to me.
Really?
And for the screenplay at the time. So imagery is really, really important to me, and I generally have an idea of what I want for the cover, and it's kind of a precursor to, you know, what goes on. I mean, if you look at the Crescendo cover, there's a mourning band over the badge.
Yes.
Which is an indicator to
that there's been a police
dead officer. Right.
Right.
For the keyboard on Staccato, it's you know, he's playing the keyboard, and
right.
the premise of that is about a mentor of three world-class pianists, and the mentor is quite twisted and not a good guy. They're all hiding out in the Great Smoky Mountains, and we find out why.
Wow.
So I like
you
visuals.
Have a visual impression first before your books. So,
well, that's what it started out for Staccato, but I didn't, of course, know that all of the screenplays are, you know, standalones. They're all their own complete story.
Sure.
There's no concept of a series. So I didn't know that I was going to be writing a series until I got my publishing contract. So and so that's
wow.
how it derived. I mean, essentially, I had my small cast of main characters that I knew would then follow through, and then added Enola and her people the last two books.
How interesting. It really is fascinating to me the way that you've come about doing this. I want to open up the phone lines right now. If you're interested in saying hello to Deborah, please do. The number is 347-633-9609. That's 347-633-9609. And Deborah has graciously agreed to give away an ebook. So whoever calls gets an ebook. Are you writing book number five right now?
I'm writing a fifth book, but not book five of the series. So
not
this
a connected
will be a,
book.
Right. This will be a standalone. And I kind of came up, I mean, there was a conference, I think it was Left Coast Crime Conference in Portland a few years ago.
Yes.
Was it? Yeah,
yes.
I think it was Left Coast Crime. It was either Left Coast Crime or BoucherCon. I think it was Left Coast Crime. And the hotel for the conference was directly across the street from a little park. And
uh-huh.
and I was stunned by how many young homeless people were hanging out in that park and essentially living, you know, in the streets. And so then that kind of germinated that, well, maybe my next book will be Portland. So so that's the location for the next one.
Yeah. How interesting. And again, you had a visual imagery came to you, and that's how your story began. fascinating.
And I think
to
that
me.
becomes because I started as an artist. I think
Yes,
that's why
there's no
visuals are
doubt.
really important. Yeah.
Absolutely. Do you form the story and then add the characters, or do you add the character? Do you have your visual? That's first. What comes next, the character or the storyline?
Well, I kind of ha I need
Premise,
to
I
have an
should say.
idea of the storyline for sure. So
Okay.
I'll need to have an overall concept of what the story is going to be about, and then I start constructing the villains for that particular book. So
Wow.
I, you know, then I, you know, do a lot of research on names and where they might be from, and just I go crazy with name research. It's sad.
But type names are important.
Oh,
Names
sure.
are the most personal thing and the most important thing that belongs to us. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I completely agree.
And I, interesting because I just posted something the other day on Facebook that said, are you your name? Do you and your name match up? And, you know, I never thought about that. Do you feel like a Deborah? Do I feel like a Pam? You know, sometimes I don't. So maybe it's from childhood because I've had so many different nicknames. But yeah, I look at people sometimes and I think, oh, the name suits you. And then other times I think, no, you're definitely not whatever it happens to be, you know?
And when I can't
So,
remember somebody's name, it's because I can't picture them in that name.
in that name, exactly. I know, I have done that where, like, the names to me, David and Gary, are kind of interchangeable. I don't know why. So if I meet someone whose name is David, sometimes I'll just call him Gary and they'll say, but that's not my name. And I say, yeah, but you don't understand. In my mind, you're a Gary, okay? So, and it's not to be mean or anything. It's just that it's an interchangeable name. I don't know why that is. But names are important. They really are, especially character titles are important. Your book titles are very unusually titled. Let's talk about those. Why Snare?
Well, I like the title to also mean numerous things as well.
Okay.
And I, you know, once it once 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 my books became a series, then I was a little bit stuck in the branding. So I, you know, each book needed to be somewhat music related. Staccato being the first one, and snare being the next
Right.
one. Staccato is about world class pianists. Snare is about a pop rock star singer songwriter who's
Okay.
in the middle of threats, and Hawk
Okay.
takes her back to actually the Taos Pueblo. That's the one that takes place also in New Mexico on the Taos Pueblo to be safe. And then, but so then I was running out of crescendo. Really, there isn't any music involved, but the crescendo element, there is a lot of suspense. Is a
Yeah,
quite a
crescendo.
lot.
I understand being a pianist. I know what all those were. Causing chaos is the one that doesn't seem to fit the theme of the names. So how did that happen?
I wanted to get out of that particular branding, and
I see.
the first book, Staccato, was out in 2009, and
Right.
Crescendo was 2014, I think. Yeah, 14. And you know, that was before, you know, 50 Shades of Grey and the bondage and so forth and so
Sure.
on. So, you know, and there's obviously, you know, the handcuffs and the rope and the chain. And I didn't, you know, my books aren't like that at all. I mean, there's nothing as far as the torture or anything like that,
No, I
or any
understand.
masochism at all. So I thought, well, on the third one, you know, let's take it a different way. So that's a two word. It's not music related. It goes more to what's going on, so much
In the
that's going
story.
on in that
Sure.
story, in that particular story. And I found, you know, speaking of visuals, the for Causing Chaos, I always loved a local author. I mean, artist, Maynard Breeze, and what he does is he'll take a photograph, and then digitally will enhance it. So for Causing Chaos, he allowed me to use one of his images as my book cover, and it's the, you know, woman on fire, you know, kind of holding
it's
out her hand.
It's an amazing image. It is an amazing image.
He's amazing, and I was very blessed for him to let me use that image.
Wow, you're not kidding. It is a beautiful picture, and it certainly is very different from the previous books. I like it very much. It's a stunning image, as a matter of fact. Do you start, or do you have a working title that stays with you generally, or do you wait until the book is finished, until you title your books?
Well, for me, the title is part of, you know, I work that into my overall concept for what's fitting. And it kind of helps keep me on track, you know, as well as the log line and the tagline that
sure.
I refer to constantly so I don't get off track. But I always have to know, say, the first five chapters completely have to know what I want to do. I need to know the ending, the title, quite a bit of dialogue. And at least, you know, two or three, mini climaxes at least. Because I'm going to be working on this thing for, you know, 3 months minimally on a first draft. So, and living with it for, you know, up to 9 months, getting it into publishing shape. So I want to be able to, I want to know that I'm going to love it for the entire time.
How much are you storyboarding or plotting ahead of time? Are you basically doing the first five chapters and then some? Are you storyboarding it? Because as somebody in film, you know, I can imagine you storyboarding. How does your process work when you're putting together your book?
Primarily, I use chapter breakdown. And the last two books, I've been doing an Excel sheet. And my books, they take place between generally between 4 days and 6 days max. So the timeline really is essential.
It's very
tight.
So
that helps me to figure out what needs to happen. You know, if I know something's going to happen at such and such a time in the evening, but right now it's only noon, then I know I'm going to have to flesh out those chapters up to that particular time. So that really does help keep me on track.
That's like writing an episode of 24, which I know that you
pretty
were
much
a part of that television show.
No,
really, really tight writing.
Yeah, no, I was not a part of that, I really do.
Oh, but you said, wait a minute. Christina Cox was. Christina Cox
okay. Appeared in that episode, yeah.
So I knew I'd seen it someplace. That's really, to have a full book based in, you know, short a period of time, that's really putting a lot on the line there. So kudos to you. No wonder you've been nominated for so many of these really amazing awards, and shame on them for not giving you some.
to be fair, you know, I lost out to Christina, and I lost out to J.K. Rowling, you know, for the for Crescendo, the other books that she writes, Peter Galbraith books,
and then
everybody's love. I adore so much Louise Penny. So
yes.
That was that's what won Best Audiobook last year. So so I'm in good company. Being a little author, the nomination is the win for me. So I'm just grateful for everyone who was stood beside me.
I'm also looking at, you know, Edgar and Anthony nominations and all. I'm keeping my eye on the nominations this year, and a lot of the really well established, you know, top 100 are not necessarily getting the nominations this year.
Yep.
And I really like that, because I think everybody should have a chance. It doesn't matter how long you've been around or who your publisher is or whether you self-publish or small press or anything like that. So I'm really happy to see so many of not even mid-listers, they're not even lucky enough to get there because no one will promote them. I love seeing them there. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
I love
it's
to
so
have
great.
Authors come on who are so talented, and, you know, They don't have any marketing budget. It's like, come on my show, which is why, you know, I do 6 interviews a week instead of like a normal person.
And we
instead
appreciate
of one a week,
so
you know?
Much.
No. It's my pleasure. Believe me, you guys are my heroes. Deborah Ledford, you are just brilliant. I'm so glad that you came on. I would love for you to let me give you a little thought to kind of swirl around in your head. You've done so many different things. Would you come back and host a show with an author that you like?
Sure, I'd love to do that.
Put talk show host on your resume?
Of course, I would love to do that. And so I know exactly who I would. I know exactly who I would interview.
Who would you interview?
So her name is Isabella Maldonado, and
yes.
her debut novel comes out tomorrow with Midnight Inc.
Well,
she
and I are friends, I think, on Facebook, aren't we? Yes.
I'm sure you are. Everybody
yes.
loves Isabella, so I couldn't be more proud. Former police officer, captain, commander, and her
there
book Blood,
is.
Blood's
yes.
Echo is so magnificent. So, yes, I would do that.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. You get in touch with Isabella, and then you know how to find me. And
yep.
then let's set something up. I don't have anything for the next two. I think I'm into June now making interviews, but I'll be glad to go ahead and set something up for you and for her. Yeah, let's do that.
Okay.
It might be her first radio interview, and
yeah.
You know, I'm glad to promote new authors. Thank you so much for being on my show tonight. I want to talk to you like for another hour, but I'll probably drive you crazy with questions. Will you come back when your new book is out, will you come back and talk to me again?
Yeah, I would love to do that. Thank you, Pam. We all adore you.
You're so sweet. Tell everybody. Let's talk about you more. Tell everybody where they can find you on the web and about your website and everything else, please.
Okay. So it's Deborah, DeborahJ Ledford.com. That's my website. And that can also take you to my publisher's site as well. And I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm at DJ Ledford. And I'm everywhere.
And Deborah is another one of those wonderful authors who actually speaks to you herself and not through some anonymous person. So when you message her or tweet, she's going to answer you back. It's her doing the answering. I encourage you to go and get Deborah J. Ledford's books. Pick up any one of them. You're going to love it, and then you're going to go back and read all of them. Deborah, I wish you so much success, and you and I are going to talk about getting Isabella on the show, okay?
Okay. All right. Thanks,
Thank
Pam.
You for being with me. Have a great evening.
Okay, you too. Take care.
Good night.
Good night.
And that's my show for tonight. Boy, two great Debs tonight, Deborah Webb and Deborah Ledford. Tomorrow night, I am blessed to be talking to my sweet friend, Allison Brennan, who's won so many awards that authors have award envy. You can go on my timeline and take a look at that. Allison will be with me at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. On Wednesday, I'm going to be talking to Wendy Tyson. And then on Friday, Carolyn Haynes. I have all these wonderful females writers on this week. Thank you for being with me, everyone. And thank you, Mom and Dad. Have a good night.